longing to get away during these dog days but can't quite swing the time off, a Florida staycation could make all the difference. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at baycareevents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WUSF Public Media, I'm Robin Sussingham. If you're looking to beat the summer doldrums, the Tampa Bay area has no shortage of ways to pass the time. Whether you're searching for a family-friendly outing, a perfect first date, or a place to spend some quality me time on a day off work, Florida Suncoast has you covered. Today on Florida Matters, we're going to explore some of the many getaways this area has to offer. To get us started, reporter Mary Shedden spoke with Sharon Kennedy Wynn, who writes about things to do for the Tampa Bay Times.
Are there some classic excursions out there, things that are really popular around Tampa Bay but we may have forgotten about?
One that I think is pretty funny that has not been lost by time is WikiWachi, which is a bargain at $13 to get admission to a spring-fed water park and an old-fashioned mermaid show. The only thing is people are onto this bargain. They often are at capacity within a couple hours of opening.
WikiWachi is a classic, but there's also some more natural places to go, aren't there?
Yeah, that's one thing that I really think everybody should at least see once is the springs, the natural gin clear water. We have all these beautiful places to go tubing and kayaking. They are gorgeous. It's free, or there might be minimal park admission. The one thing, some of them do have park capacities. You do need to double check the place you want to go. I've found that Rainbow Springs has the least amount of trouble with this issue. You really should see them because they're just stunningly beautiful.
Now, some of these things that we're talking about cost nothing, but some have cost associated with them. Can you give me a sense of some of the things that are fun to do and maybe are worth a couple of bucks?
I think people really do choke over these admission prices they hear, and I get that. You hear $100 on average for a theme park, or $25 at least, even for like just even a zoo or a museum. Well, the thing I tell people is think about if this is a place you might go to at least twice or more, think about getting a membership and then using it all the time, unlimited admission. That's about the price of your average concert ticket or Broadway show, and then you have unlimited admission to an attraction like that you like, a theme park or water park or zoo or museum that you like. It's, I think, money well spent, because once you've used it twice, it's paid for.
There are some people, and I know many of them, who will not go outside for anything this time of year. Anything that involves fun has to involve air conditioning. What do you say for these folks? Is there something for them?
Sunday at the Rays is free if you have at least four people in your car to park. I was kind of like, remind people, hey, we have baseball inside here.
So even if you don't like baseball, maybe you could bring a book and enjoy some time with the friends and family.
Yes, that could be very good.
Now, Sharon, we're asking our listeners to tell us some of their favorite staycations and getaway. And I know you've lived here in the Tampa Bay area a long time. Are you willing to share your favorite secret getaway location for you and your family?
I'm not so sure it's a secret, but I am shocked at how many locals I know have been to Fort DeSoto a million times and never been to the actual fort. That shocks me because that's my favorite place to bring in out-of-towners. The kids love to climb on the cannons and go in the jails. I need, just even adults love that place.
Florida Matters reporter Mary Shedden talking with Sharon Kennedy Wynn from the Tampa Bay Times. We do have some postcard perfect scenery. The bright blues of Tampa Bay and the lush greens of palm trees and mangroves. Now imagine what it would be like to see all of that from a bird's eye view. Let's join Florida Matters producer Stephanie Colombini as she soars above the city of Oldsmar in Pinellas County.
About halfway between bustling downtown Tampa and the Gulf beaches, you'll find nearly 400 acres of peace and quiet in the Mobley Bayou Wilderness Preserve. Unless you're near the area where Empower Adventures Tampa Bay has made its home, in which case you'll hear sounds more along the lines of
woo-hoo!
The company's been offering zip line tours in Oldsmar for a little over a year now. I arrived to test the ropes early one drizzling morning, still puffy-eyed, but not at all anxious about the thrills that lay ahead. A self-proclaimed adrenaline junkie, I figured this day would be a breeze. Outside the course, I met a couple other tourmates and our guides, Jocelyn DeVriest and Calvin Joustra.
I will be your receiving guide. That means I go down the line first, so you can gotta get a sense of how the line is running. Jocelyn will be your zipline therapist today, so if you need any words of encouragement, she will be there to provide those for you.
We ran through a brief but critical overview of equipment and safety procedures. Key lessons, trust the gear, and listen for the word zip on as the green light to take that nerve-wracking first step off the platform. Now the fun could begin.
So zip on three, here we go. 1, 2, 3, zip on! All right, we are ready to climb up to the very...
Up a seemingly endless flight of stairs, you'll definitely work your glutes on this trip. We made it to the first zip line.
Zipping Stephanie.
Zip on Stephanie.
All right, here we go.
My morning drowsiness was immediately wiped away as I soared about six stories above palms, pines, and oak trees.
Oh, I'm having a bath.
All right, Stephanie, how was it?
I love them.
The guides had a fairly easy day cut out for them with a small group of young thrill seekers like myself. But Calvin Joustra insists this course isn't just for fearless flyers. He's had customers as old as 96 years old and some who were absolutely terrified to zip on.
Sometimes it's something that's on their bucket list that they want to accomplish. Sometimes they're like, I'm scared of heights. I want to get past this. It's our job as guides to just help them find the courage that's inside of them to be able to take that step off.
The basic $69 package at Empower gets you 5 zip lines and a walk across a suspension bridge. But for an extra $20, you can also experience the extreme course. It includes aerial obstacles that test the mind and the muscles, like a swinging log, rickety bridge, and tightrope walk. I patted myself on the back for getting through most of these smoothly, but had my ego checked on an obstacle with crisscrossed ropes known as the hourglass.
I'm crab walking, basically, sideways, along a tightrope. Nice view of the bay.
Woo! Lean forward.
All right, I just fell backwards, but I'm still on the rope.
Safely back on the platform, I gave my wobbly legs a break on another zip line through the preserve.
Zipping over the treetops, I see an osprey eating a fish.
Speaking of osprey, one of the best views of the entire course is along the 200-foot-long Flight of the Osprey suspension bridge. It gets its name from the healthy population of birds that live around the course. We lucked out because the light rain cleared up just as we got to the bridge, so we were greeted with a cool breeze and brilliant sunlight that made Tampa Bay sparkle. Off in the distance, you can spot the skyscrapers of downtown Tampa and St. Pete, the Courtney Campbell Causeways in clear view, and if you squint hard, Jocelyn DeVriest points out you can even see the smokestacks of Apollo Beach Power Plant.
This is our office.
Are you hiring?
The bridge sets you up for the last zip line. At 650 feet, it's the longest one in the course and also the fastest, sending you right over the bay at whipping speeds. Well, 5 for 5 and still alive, we all gave ourselves a round of applause. But we weren't done yet. The extreme package wraps up with the leap of faith. Basically, you climb up a power pole, stand upright at the top, and jump off it. Sounded real simple to me, until I actually had to do it. Climbing up the pegs of the pole was nothing, but when I reached that critical point at the top where I had to commit to stepping off the pegs and onto the pole's narrow surface, panic began to set in.
Taking a breather, secretly stalling.
There were a couple of failed half attempts where I'd lift my right foot off the peg, sway a little bit, and immediately glue myself back to the pole, my heart racing faster and faster from the fear of falling off and insecurity about holding the tour up for what felt like an eternity.
It's not even a leap of faith, it's a get on top of the pole in faith. Okay.
After probably saying, okay, another 30 times, I braced myself, put one foot on top of the pole, and began to put my weight on it, expecting to tumble off at any moment, and then I was standing until it was time to jump off.
3, 2, 1. Woo!
When I was finally on the ground safely and disconnected from my harness, I was more proud of myself than I'd been in a long time.
Nice job!
I'm like shaking!
I wrapped up my day at Empower Adventures satisfied and surprised. I found out I'm not superhuman, but that's okay, because learning that lesson was a blast. For Florida Matters, I'm Stephanie Colombini.
Sometimes I am really glad I'm a reporter. I get to do things like tour William Dean Chocolates, and all in the line of duty, taste as many different kinds of chocolate as is humanly possible. Don't hate me when you hear what I got to taste. You could take the tour too, and I'll try not to make any Willy Wonka references.
My name's William Brown, and I'm the owner and chief chocolate officer at William Dean Chocolates.
That's a bit tongue-in-cheek and a jab at stuffy business titles from Brown's old days in the dot-com and corporate world. He had been climbing the corporate ladder when he saw Alton Brown making truffles on TV. Making chocolate became his hobby, and then 10 years ago, he started William Dean Chocolates. At age 57, he's now considered one of the best chocolatiers in the country.
Hershey's is very successful the way they do it. I'd love to own Hershey's instead of William Dean Chocolates, probably financially. But my passion really is to make the very best things we can make.
William Dean Chocolate's small cafe in Bel Air Bluffs near Largo features a case of vibrantly colored chocolates with flavors like key lime, rosemary caramel, bananas Foster, and espresso, so beautifully decorated that they were used as props in a Hunger Games movie. Whoopi Goldberg is a regular customer, and she got his chocolates noticed when she brought them on The View. Step through a door just behind the display cases, and you're in the busy 2,700 square foot kitchen. William Brown is a whirlwind of energy, and I have to chase him around the kitchen with my microphone while he talks a mile a minute, describing the myriad of wonders going on around us.
It's a working kitchen, so right now there's gelato going by, there's chocolates coming out.
Your backstage pass to William Dean Chocolates comes with the price of various food packages. Typically, you'll get up a group of 10 or more, perhaps have afternoon tea, take a tour of the kitchen, and make your own chocolate bar. It costs around $25 to $30 per person. As you can hear, it's a noisy place. It seems like every inch is taken up by machines that are whirring, shaking, blending, baking. The workers in their crisp uniforms are all busy with various activities.
The afternoon tea starts in about an hour. So they're baking the scones. I don't know if you can smell the bacon, so we have a bacon scone.
To our right, an assistant is working on chocolates at a long marble table.
This is our Muscovado Caribbean Caramel. And this is when they're revealing the chocolate, taking them out of the mold.
Back in another corner, Brown's nephew is concocting some exotic flavored gelato in what looks like a big blender. Its loud whine interrupts his description of the chocolate making process.
And so all these mold gelato. He's making gelato right now. So the first step is to paint the molds, which takes a lot of time.
Those molds he's talking about are painted with colored cocoa butter, which gives the chocolate bonbons their bright shine and color. Those molded chocolates are also called Belgian style. The other type he makes are the French style slab chocolates cut into small squares.
If you want to try this, this is actually roasted white chocolate. Chocolate we bake in the oven for over an hour. So you get that kind of dulce de leche flavor. It's richer than a caramel. Now the dark chocolate, we're going to coat it in dark chocolate so it has a shell on the outside, really thin of dark chocolate. And what that does is take away a little bit of the sweetness so you get kind of a better balance. And
that is so good.
I love that one.
That is so good.
Yeah.
Okay, so how much would that cost, that little square?
Well, when it's finished, our chocolates are $1.75 a piece.
So that would have been $1.75.
You would have got more chocolate.
Bite.
But you really, we use real ingredients. We don't
use... No, I mean, I feel satisfied.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, you don't really eat more than three pieces or so. Our chocolates, because they're using cream and butter and milk, and they're using real ingredients, and there's not lots of sugar, they're much more satisfying.
The chocolate that Brown uses to make his candies is Valrhona, imported from France. He has bags of Valrhona flavors stacked on shelves he calls 17. His chocolate wall.
18, 19, 20. I have 21, 22 flavors. This is how the chocolate comes to me.
As he describes each bag, he hands me an oval pellet to taste.
This is brand new, so you'll be one of a very select few that have had this. So this is a 55% dark chocolate that has had passion fruit added to the fermentation process. So it's all natural. There's no fake flavor. You'll get it at the end. And then this is a brand new one that very few people have. So this is another roasted chocolate. But this time, instead of regular sugar, they used a sugar called Muscovado. So Muscovado is a sugar from the West Indies that has a high molasses content. So this has kind of a toffee, molasses, a little bit of a flavor to it.
This tastes really different.
Yeah, because it's a different sugar. It's a molasses sugar. So with white sugar.
And it
says
on here, licorice and
yeah.
You can, it
and
does.
that's because of the sugar.
By the time we're finished sampling all the different Valrhona flavors, I'm getting quite full. In fact, I might be feeling a little sick, honestly, but I can't stop yet. There's still so much to see and sample. It's impossible to resist the comparison to you-know-who's chocolate factory. And like Willy Wonka, it's about more than the candy. The tour is an inspirational journey into passion, the force of creativity, and the desire to be the best. And you also get to make your own bar of chocolate. This is Florida Matters, and we're talking about staycations in the Tampa Bay area. I'm Robin Sessingham. We'll be right back. This is Florida Matters, and we're taking a look at some ways to escape the everyday hustle and bustle and have some fun in the Tampa Bay area. Just before the break, we visited a chocolate shop to beat the heat, and the cool confines of a museum offer another perfect antidote to scorching temperatures. In Tampa Bay, one city in particular is home to plenty of museums that can keep your staycation cool. Florida Matters' Kathy Carter recently sat down with Wayne Atherholt, Cultural Affairs Director for the City of St. Petersburg.
So Wayne, from our vantage point at your office in City Hall, just outside the store, we have the Dalí, we have the MFA, we have the Chihuly, and a couple of museums are on the way. But let's talk about somebody who wants to spend some time in St. Petersburg on their staycation here. Where would you tell them to go first?
Oh, I would say, well, certainly downtown St. Petersburg is where you would go first. And I think absorbing everything, the whole atmosphere of St. Petersburg, because the entire city now is a museum. We've got these wonderful murals all over the city and all over downtown. So you get a feeling that this is a really cool, fun place with some really cool international artists as well as local artists represented.
Fantastic. So now that we do have the lay of the land, let's head over to the city's probably most famous museum, the Salvador Dali, largest collection of his art outside of his home country of Spain. What are some of your favorite things about this museum?
The nice thing about the Dali is the docent tours, and you can take a dozen docent tours and come away with a dozen different experiences. And each painting has got something about it. So whether you're into surrealism or whether you're into realism or whether you're into cubism, any style really, Dali experimented with them. He's done some wonderful impressionist pieces, some of his early pieces. So there's something there for everybody. And so you don't necessarily have to be an art person to really walk away with a terrific experience at the Dali.
All right, well, let's walk down the street a little bit to the Chihuly Collection at the Morian Art Center, brand new building. Tell us a little bit about the new digs.
The new facility is right across from the Morian Art Center itself and right across from the Morian Hot Shop and Glass Studio. So it's now all part of a campus there. It's incredible. I mean, it's, you know, Dale is an international artist. The space is, of course, designed around the exhibits, which really helps. And so you've got all of Dale's interests, the Pendleton blankets there. You've got the Pacific Northwest wood. And so you've got the smells of the wood and so forth all interacting with this incredible artwork. Besides glass, I mean, there's two-dimensional pieces there, too. I mean, Dale would take paper and he would take his paints in squeeze bottles, and he would stand above the paper, and that's how he would design some of these pieces. And so you go through the collection and you see some of this, and then you see the actual end result. You go across the street then to the Morian Glass Studio and Hot Shop, and you see local artists blowing glass, and you get a little bit of an appreciation for what Dale must have done in his early career as a glass blower in Italy and in Washington.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I think if somebody does go to the collection, they should go over and see some of the local glassblowers, because that's a fascinating process to watch.
Absolutely is. I would certainly encourage anybody to do that. It doesn't take that long. The glass blowing demonstrations are about 40, 45 minutes. And then the Art Center itself has got always some sort of an exhibit. Generally, it's two-dimensional paintings and watercolors and so forth. But sometimes there's ceramic shows because the Morian also runs the Morian Center for Clay, which is the largest working pottery in the southeastern United States. So you'll see actual artists in there working, and they've got some gallery space, and it's a great place to go shopping too.
The St. Petersburg Museum staycation is getting longer.
You really?
We haven't even been to the MFA yet.
No, or the History Museum or the Holocaust Museum. I consider my life one big giant staycation here. I mean, when we do our second Saturday art walk, there's over 40 venues that are open on a Saturday night. There's no way to do it all. And so your staycation is suddenly, gosh, you know, I need to move here.
But when we do talk about the big three right now, we have to include the yes. MFA.
The Museum of Fine Arts is an excellent museum in that it has a very broad collection. So you can go there and see artifacts, see paintings, you can see Impressionist paintings, you can see modern art, you can see sculptures. They've got a terrific Steuben glass collection. There's usually a photography exhibit up. So there's always something there. It's a great general museum, and most cities would be very, very lucky to have such a well-rounded museum as part of their city.
Well, I think we have enough to do with our summer museum staycation in St. Pete this summer, but I don't want to let you go without getting a sneak peek of some of the newer museums that are set to open in the city. Can you give us a bit of a sneak peek?
Absolutely. We'll be adding the Imagine Museum, which is a studio glass museum, 30,000 square foot facility in the Grand Central District. Will be opening, we believe, probably by the end of the year. The Tom and Mary James Museum of Wildlife Art and Western Art, one of the best collections of Western and wildlife art in the United States. That'll be opening up right downtown. And then there's also the American Arts and Crafts Movement Museum, the best collection of American arts and crafts movement art that exists really outside of probably the Victoria and Albert Museum in London. But it's a great addition for St. Petersburg because we've got some wonderful bungalow-style neighborhoods from this period in the 1920s when St. Petersburg went through one of its several different boom periods in the 20s when the arts and crafts movement was so popular. But that's going to be a terrific facility in terms of value. I mean, I believe that's probably an $80, $90 million project. These are very significant things, and we've got three of them coming in, one right after the other. And so in terms of a staycation, come back, because there's always going to be something different. Just so many things to see and do. It's just incredible.
That was Florida Matters reporter Kathy Carter talking with Wayne Atherholt, the Cultural Affairs Director for the City of St. Petersburg. Talked about plenty of things to do during the day, but what if you're more of a night owl? Well, there's no shortage of eateries and bars in Tampa's historic Ybor City, but if you find yourself looking for a local adventure of the paranormal sort, there are quite a few haunts. Florida Matters' Daylena Miller takes us on the official ghost tour of Ybor City.
It's just after 8 p.m. on a recent Friday night outside the King Corona Cafe in Ybor City. Throngs of people are filing into the many bars and clubs hosted alongside historic 7th Avenue, but some are here for a different kind of entertainment. Greg Milton, wearing a bright red vest, matching bow tie, and black bowler hat, is lining up about 20 people for tonight's ghost tour.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, if you did not get it before, my name is Greg. I'm your ghost host with the most. Welcome to Ybor City. How's everybody doing?
Yeah.
Okay, he walks up and down the crowded sidewalk, gesturing passionately with his hands.
Now here's the thing, we are a historical walking tour first with a paranormal investigation of the fourth most haunted building in the United States, folks. I hope you're ready for this.
Yep.
Now let's get down to the real brass tacks. How many people believe in ghosts? Raise them up, let me see them.
And so the tour begins. Both believers and skeptics walk across the street to the first stop and sandwich themselves between bronze statues of Roland Montega reading the La Gazzetta and Ybor City founder Vicente Martinez Ybor.
The city in 1885 was nothing but a godforsaken hellhole of a swamp, ladies and gentlemen. That is a true story. There were 700 people here in 1885. The biggest population were snakes, mosquitoes, and alligators.
After that, Milton takes the tour down back streets, past old cigar factories, weaving tales of bootleggers, speakeasies, and a secret tunnel system underneath Ybor. Many of the stories are based in fact. Some are exaggerated or unverifiable. He pulls out a plastic handheld device with several blinking lights. It's an electromagnetic field meter, which is used to diagnose problems with electrical wiring and power lines and to get readings on appliances. Ghost hunters claim they also light up and emit a noise in the presence of ghosts.
Here's how it works. It measures everything above or below the human range. See the big red button? All you're going to do is push it.
Eventually, the group ends up in front of the Cuban Club, rebuilt in 1918 after a fire. The building has been dubbed one of the top 10 most haunted places in the U.S. by the Travel Channel. And in 2009, the Sci-Fi Channel's Ghost Hunters team investigated there. There are two known deaths that took place on the property dating as far back as the 1920s. An actor committed suicide on stage, and a board member was murdered after an argument with a fellow board member. Their ghosts, and the ghosts of a woman in white and 8-year-old boy, have been repeatedly spotted by visitors over the last 100 years. Milton, a professional actor, adamantly believes in ghosts. But he knows that not everyone here tonight does.
There's some people that are like an episode of Ghost Hunters. Oh my God, did you hear that? Oh my God, did you see that? I get that. And then I get the other one who's at the other end, like, so stoic, so skeptical, it's hard to accept anything.
Katie Curtis, a high school history teacher, falls somewhere in the middle.
I think Greg is an amazing storyteller. I think he weaves in the history and the stories so that you're compelled to believe that something might be there.
The next hour is spent in the darkened theater. Tour participants investigate the rooms behind the stage and take photos on their phone cameras. Each person holds a flashlight or a meter. As they explore the room, whispering amongst themselves, Milton tells them to pay special attention to the seating area.
Folks, I'm not kidding you, there has been no shortage of people captured on film sitting in the seats, but they're not actually there.
No one sees a ghost on this tour. But by the end of the night, they're all scrolling through their camera rolls, pointing out blurred faces, shadowy figures, and white, shining orbs they think could be evidence for life after death. And the official Ybor City Ghost Tour reposts them in photo galleries on their website for everyone else to determine for themselves. For Florida Matters, I'm Daylena Miller.
That's it for today's show. You can keep the conversation going by sharing your favorite local getaways on our Facebook page or by emailing floridamatters@wusf.org. And be sure to check out our website, wusfnews.org, for some great photos and videos from our staycation stories. Florida Matters is produced by Stephanie Colombini. Our show is a production of WUSF Public Media. I'm Robin Sussingham. Thanks for listening.